The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, August the 20th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with the world's fastest sprint car driver, Damian Gardner. Anna Kuba, a young female racer with the United Midwest Sprint Series, will join us. And we'll also talk with Logan Schuhart as he picked up two wins over the weekend and his plans for 2014. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. And by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. And by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Justin Henderson. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Our first guest is now the world's fastest sprint car driver. We talked with him last week as he was in between runs out of the Bonneville Salt Flats, and he rips off 194.7 mile an hour average. He did go 195 through the speed traps, and he even spun out at 180. We're about to find out what that was like as we bring back the Demon and the current points leader for the United States Auto Club CRA Sprint Cars out there in Southern California, Damian Gardner. Damian, welcome back to the broadcast once again, and congratulations on becoming the world's fastest sprint car driver.
Thank you very much, and it's good to be back.
So what was it like, Damian? We talked last week. You were just getting acclimated to the Salt Flats. Take us through the progression of the week from the first run to that final run on Friday morning.
We ran Friday and Saturday. We had to run Watsonville and Santa Maria with the CRA. So we went and did that. And, they started Bonneville. Actually starts on that Friday. So we missed a few days. And we drove all night to get there. And we got there on Sunday. And they have, a rookie orientation that we had to go to. So we got there on Monday. We got there, at 11 o'clock, thinking we got there at 11 o'clock, because actually 10:30. And the meeting was supposed to be at 11, but little did we know when we got there, literally, in 1 mile from, our hotel to Bonneville, you lose an hour.
Oh, jeez.
So when we actually arrived at Bonneville, as we drove in, we were a half hour late. So I missed the meeting and had to wait till the next day.
Oh, man. How did you explain to his stewards that you guys didn't know that there was that bit of a time difference within a 1 mile radius?
Yeah, I know. It was terrible. They said they were going to see what they could do. And, we appreciate all them guys were busy out there, and they just never got around us. So we ended up having to wait till the next day. But they only do one class a day. So that was it, man. We had to wait till the next day. And I kind of, little did I know at the time, but Bonneville's a lot like a dirt track. So, the more you go, the longer the week goes on and the later on in the day you run, the worse the surface is. So the idea is to go early and then go early in the morning, So all in all, the earlier you can go in the week and the earlier you can go is the better, So we kind of got behind early there.
Let me ask you real quick, were you able to watch any of the runs, and did you learn anything on that day when you weren't able to run on Monday?
A little bit. I watched the cars go down there, and everyone was like, they were Bonneville people were a lot of big help, but no one kind of knew anything. I kind of learned more as I was going along.
Mm-hmm.
And once that we started going, it's like people started getting behind us. And a lot of people said we wouldn't be able to go 200, you know, and we didn't, but we got close. But, you know, in that sort of a wheelbase car. And then once we started going, people kind of got excited and kind of were behind us and helping us to, you know, to get there. And then, you know, just little things. I went out and looked at the surface and, you know, just really learned a lot in a week. And, you know, just have a really better idea what I'm doing when I go back.
What was the reaction from some of the Bonneville regulars when they came over and they looked at the, as you just mentioned, the short-based open-wheel car, and they're looking at it going, okay, so this thing is going to try to attempt to go 200 miles an hour, and here you have these sleek, aerodynamic, specifically built cars to go run the Bonneville Salt Flats as fast as they can. What was the reaction from some of the competitors?
Yeah, I mean, before we got there with the LMRIs and so forth, you know, there was a lot of them that just basically said, good luck.
Sort of like, you know, good luck, and go, yeah, right, like that car's going to do 200, right?
Yeah, sum that up however you will. But they were all real good, especially once we got there and they saw that we were serious about trying to do it, and they kind of got behind us, you know, and we weren't just, we weren't just fly-by-night guys, that we really wanted to try to do it, and that we brought it. We made a serious effort and made a serious attempt to show up there with, you know, all the equipment to do it. And then I think then once they seen all that, they kind of, I don't know, maybe appreciated it all. And then, you know, they all began to help us. And really, you know, they were all the people there and all the Bonneville staff, SCTA guys were all just, you know, tremendous help.
Was it like going to the dirt tracks for the first time in your career in a non-wing sprint car and talking to some of the greats and them saying the same thing, you know, good luck, kid, and going, okay, let's see what the kid can do. Is it like that in terms of...
Yeah, it's kind of like that, exactly. You know, and then it was actually really cool. I mean, by the end of it, you know, when we were reaching 190, 180, you know, right in there, like everyone from the tracks, the stewards, you know, and the people, you know, at the track, they were all kind of behind us and supportive, and they, you know, they were... You know, just giving us like, hey, good job, you know, stick with it. And they were kind of a, you know, I think one day we ran like four or five times in one day. We just kept turning around and going back to the line.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, you know, they were like, kind of like, what is this guy doing? You know, because they're used to seeing someone make one or two runs a day. And, you know, and we just kept making runs, you know. So it was a lot of fun.
Give me a first-hand perspective. As we mentioned on last week's broadcast, as we're talking with Damian Gardner, now the world's fastest sprint car driver, you have no radio communication, which I thought was rather interesting considering the speeds that you guys are going, and if something does go wrong, it can go horribly wrong in a heartbeat out there. I would have thought they would have allowed some kind of communications, only from the standpoint of safety. And being able to communicate with the driver should something go wrong. But what was your view like as you got quicker and quicker? You mentioned that you could see the mountains and you just saw white. Did things change a little bit in perspective? And were you able to slow the run down and focus on trying to get to that magical 200-mile-per-hour mark as you reached that day of Friday of trying to hit that mark?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, things calmed down, and I, you know, just every time that I ran, I had a better understanding of, you know, what was going on and what it was supposed to feel like. Like the first time I went 190, that was probably the hairiest run I had had. Like the car was just all over the place. One time I almost like lost it, and I didn't think I was going to get to 190 or even 200 because, I lost kind of, at one point, I lost control of the car and I had to gather it back up. And the car, just what it did, it just went from the right of the track all the way to the left, which was like 30 feet, 40 feet. And I gathered it back up and then took off again to try to still make it. And it was just, I thought maybe I had made it, but what was happening was I was spinning the tack said I went 200 miles an hour, but I was spinning the tires, which I had thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still spinning the tires there, but it was that run there was really a lot of driving, you know. And then there was other runs that weren't quite like that. They were just really smooth and so forth. Even the times when I spun out, there were some runs that were really smooth, and then all of a sudden I just kind of, the car got a little wobble to it and it lost control, but everything is really calm and really like quiet per se, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the madness of the motor like on a weekly show when the motor's just up and down and the car's sideways and then straight. You have none of that. It's more, you know, the motor slowly humming and it just comes more alive, more alive, more alive, and you can hear the wind, and it's just a whole different feeling.
That has to be a pretty cool feeling, being out there by yourself. It is truly man and machine against Mother Nature. And as I was reading from Scott Delosio's press releases, the aquifers during the day would, you know, send the water up, and now that turns the salt into slush. So, again, as you mentioned before, it's sort of like a dirt track. What did you guys learn about how the track changes out there in Bonneville that you'll be able to take back with you for next year? And how quickly do you think you can get up to 200 next year?
I got a lot of ideas on what we need to change, and they're not major changes. They're just a lot of little changes that we need to do, and we're going to do those things, and then we're going to go back, and I think 200 is, you know, definitely achievable. I don't know how far beyond that is achievable. I don't know, really. I think we plan in the future to work with some guys at a school, and we're gonna go to a wind tunnel and do a little work there. And so that'll be interesting, just to see what we see and what we find out there. And like I said, I think we'll be able to get 200, and then who knows where we'll go from there.
If you had to take a guess, Damien, what do you think the car would be capable of handling, it where it would be comfortable to drive, but at the same time you would be on the verge of out of control as a non-wing sprint car can be during a race?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know at this point. You know, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I don't know that. You know, the problem is the wheelbase. It's so short. You know, that's the problem. So we're gonna have to get some people outside the box thinking to be able to achieve, you know, like, I don't know, maybe 250 would be huge, you know? I mean, that would be really, you have to do your homework, but that's partly what we want to try to do.
And that'd be one badass sprint car hauling down the Bonneville salt flats as well. Now, I understand that you did spin out on Friday morning. That was the third time, and I guess three spins and you're done rule, just like in racing.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, I know Mom and your sister and the rest of the family was there. I have to ask, how was Mom after that big spin out?
After the first one, she was pretty nervous, I think, because we had talked about it, but no one had seen it. But, Mom was a little nervous. She was giving me a little few longer hugs than normal. And but I think as it went along, you know, we kind of, she realized it would be okay, and but she can only stand a couple runs, and then she has to go stay in the trailer for a while.
Isn't that just like some moms? And I met your mom, and she's a wonderful gal.
Yeah.
But isn't that just typical of some of the mothers that whose sons are racers? They can watch them for a little bit, but then sometimes they got to go back to the trailer and just try to sort of forget about it.
Exactly.
But then there's other moms that are out there cheering. They're living daylights out of the place, you know?
Yeah. My mom's not one of those moms. My mom, I wouldn't say she loves racing, but she loves watching me do what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that's why she puts up with it and goes through it and entertains it all. But I don't think I picked the job that she per se wanted me to do. She wouldn't have picked this one out for me.
What would she have had you do if you weren't racing?
Oh, no. My mom, she would, my whole life, she just wanted me to do whatever made me happy, you know, which that's what this is. But I'm sure she might have thought of something a little safer.
We're talking with Damien Gardner, the world's fastest sprint car driver. Not only that, he's the current points leader in the USAC CRA sprint car division. Check out these stats from this year. 5 feature wins, 4 fast times, 6 heat race wins, a dash win, 14 top 10s, and he's led 91 laps. Now, we're still maybe coming up on the halfway mark of the USAC CRA season, but it's been since 05 since you've won a championship. With the numbers and the way you guys are rolling as second and the third as of recently, what are your thoughts on picking up your second USAC CRA championship this year?
Oh, you know, the guys there, like the Scott Sales car, Mark Alexander, Steve, those guys give me a great car. And they gave me the opportunity when I moved back here to drive it, and it's been a good year. I mean, we've been rolling, and it took a little bit to get there, and we've been rolling lately, and here lately we haven't cracked off the wins lately, but we've been really good. The car's been really, really good. But, you know, just the other night we went had to go to the back because of an incident, and we ran her back to second, so it's been a good year. You know, you never want to say you got it because it's you never know what can happen in a year, year of racing. But definitely, we keep growing like this, and we'll be champs again.
Damien, yeah. Your final thoughts on the Bonneville deal? It came together very quickly, and again, congratulations. And we're glad to hear that you know you hit 195 at 194.7 officially, and that you did make it back safe. Your final thoughts on the entire week, and is there one way that you can sum up your feelings for that experience?
Yeah, you know, I just you know, I want to thank everybody that helped us out, that was a part of it, you know, and I want to thank Big E, Steve Watt there, Maxwell Industries, and Steve and Mike Ruswick with Surf and Sprint and Loud Pedal guys. These are the four guys that really we put it all together and made it all, you know, made it happen, along with all the sponsors that come on board. All the people, ARP, these people, Weld Wheels, Franklin, these guys come on board and made special parts for the project. And we just, I can't thank all those guys enough. Even the media, you guys, the press, they all embraced it and showed everyone what it was all about. And, it's going to be a documentary, so the Live Pedal guys are going to make something out of it. We'll see what that turns into. They do great work, so I'm excited to see it. And, I don't know, if I had to say one word, it's just, it's been an amazing ride.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, too, as I want to see you flying down the Bonneville Salt Flats. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's a great idea. And it was a big help, I think, too, for a time for our sport when we've been down a little bit with some unfortunate tragedies over the past several months, and mainstream media putting us down even further when we were already down with some untruths about our great sport. But you're a great ambassador for the sport. And, again, congratulations to you and the entire crew for going out. And you didn't hit the 200, but at least you set some very attainable goals for next year, and we wish you all the best of luck when you guys head back out to the Bonneville Salt Flats. And again, we appreciate your time and joining us here on the Sprint Car Show.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys covering it, and look forward to talking to you about it in the near future.
Sounds great. Damien Gardner, now the world's fastest sprint car driver, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break, and we'll be back with more right after this. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on Rod Ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality rod ends on the market with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Lance DeWeese, and you're listening to the Sprint Car Show, Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We're going to head out now to the upper Midwest and bring in a 21-year-old sprint car driver, Anna Kuba. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi. How are you doing, Sean?
We're doing great. Just a little quick background on Anna. She is a third-generation driver. Her late grandparents, Earl and Ethel Kuba, have had a 21-year memorial race, which took place this past weekend under the sanctioning of the Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series. And Earl, her grandfather, used to race midgets all the way back far as 1931, out there in Colorado. So a lengthy time for the Kuba family and a well-known name in the upper Midwest when it comes to midgets and sprint car racing. And Anna, what is the first recollection that you have as a kid about your grandfather's accomplishments and your family's foray into the world of dirt track, sprint car, and midget racing?
I guess ever since I can remember, I've been around racing since I was 6 months old. We've had this memorial race. My grandpa actually passed away when I was 6 months old. So we started holding this right when I was a baby, and ever since I can remember, that was the best race, and that was the race we always wanted to go to, and it was just very well known and very prestige up in the upper Midwest area. And since then, that's all I ever wanted to do and everything I ever wanted to be, so because of my grandpa.
And when did you start getting into auto racing yourself?
I started racing go-karts when I was about 8 years old, and then obviously I played soccer a little bit, so playing soccer and racing was a little bit tough. Finally got into sprint car racing about 3 years ago.
You've been playing soccer quite a bit then. She is the team captain at Wisconsin River Falls, a Division III school where she is double majoring in business and marketing. So what was that like in the early days to try to explain to your girlfriends that you're playing soccer, but at the same time you're hopping over in the go-kart and chasing down the boys and beating the boys to the checkered flag?
Yeah, that's so funny to explain, especially just now. People don't really understand the sport, and so when I bring new people to the sport, I mean, it's a whole different culture, and it's a whole different world, and a lot of people don't really understand it until they come, but they're always really intrigued and always kind of see me as just that really crazy girl on the team that is really willing to do anything. So I kind of take that from the field onto the track as well.
Now, when you say crazy, how do you define crazy girl on the field for soccer?
Kind of the one running everywhere and ready to take on anything. So that's kind of what it was like with going into sprint cars, because I made the jump from go-karts to sprint cars with nothing in between. So it's a big jump and always ready to try something new.
Yeah, that is a big jump. In terms of go-karts, how high up did you get in the ranks, like the lights, the mediums, the extra heavies? How high up were you when you last raced go-karts before you raced the sprint car?
I was just entering the stock light series, so that's unrestricted.
Mm-hmm.
And I entered that probably about 6 years ago, so I had like a 2-year gap before I even got into sprint cars. So it was quite a big jump, but we were turning fast laps from a young age, so that was a lot of fun.
So being the fact that you guys are up there in the Minnesota, Wisconsin, upper Midwest area, where all did you run in the go-karts and how much traveling did you guys do?
We traveled all the way up to Superior, Duluth. My home track was actually in Balsam Lake, Wisconsin, and then we just traveled kind of around. There was one in Menominee and just kind of everywhere. So we didn't travel too far, but we had to call a little bit because there wasn't as many tracks as there probably are in different areas of the United States. So.
And was that WKA or is that just regional racing for you in the go-karts?
Just regional racing, but it was a lot of fun, yeah. It was usually Sundays because my dad raced, so we'd haul down south to southern Minnesota and then like almost an all-nighter and then go out to the go-kart track as a family. So we had a lot of fun back in the day.
It's going to say that had to be interesting to race all day and all night and then go race again the next morning and on not
yeah.
much sleep.
Yeah, if dad ever had a bad night, you usually didn't wanted to give him a little time in the morning, but we always made it fun. He was always great, and we had a lot of fun. It's a lot of camaraderie, and I've actually never been able to race against my dad, just my brother has. So, but just having him at the track, having my brother at the track, just having all these people to rely on, it just makes it a lot more easier, especially with that such a big transition. But, I mean, it definitely gets some sibling competition. When the first time I ever beat my brother, he was always the one I looked up to, and so beating him just made it that much better. But we have fun with it. We help each other out. It's not really ever any big rivalry, but we always are looking to each other. Make each other better.
I guess at the Thanksgiving dinner table, when the stories start getting told, it's like, wait a second, that's right, I beat you at that race.
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't let him forget
yeah.
about it, do you?
Oh, no, I definitely don't, but we're usually pretty good about it.
So what was it like making the transition from the unrestricted go-karts into a full-bore 360 sprint car?
The transition was huge. I mean, just the speed alone and everything, that was probably the biggest transition. And go-karts are a lot more stable. Sprint cars, you have to wing her in there and hope they stay. And so I think just adjusting to that and adjusting to the speed was the biggest thing. I think it made it a lot easier being able to start in such a small series like we started out in. where I could get a lot of laps in, because with our series, we do heat race challenges, challenge races, and features. So I was able to get a lot of laps early, which I think really helped me improve. Actually, like my first race, I ended up getting eighth and rookie of the race, which I think just helped my confidence grow huge. And having that whole family background just really helps me grow and always have that confidence. I think confidence is such huge in the sport, and if you don't have it, it's going to definitely hinder how well you perform.
With the Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series, they have both the traditional non-wing sprint cars and the wing sprint cars. Have you ventured over into the non-wing sprint cars yet?
I actually have not yet, unfortunately. My brother has, and his second night in, he won. So it's definitely something I'm interested in. We were going to put together a car, but I think that's something we're looking to in for the 2014 season. But currently my cousin and my uncle, that's what they're racing for the UMSS. A little more affordable and a lot of fun. You get sideways a lot easier in those non-wings without that wing keeping you down.
Yeah, and a lot more driver control as well, because it is a whole different monster when you're jumping into a non-wing sprint car compared to having that big wing over the top of your head as well. Also, I noticed there are two other females that are racing in the Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series, so I'm curious to find out what kind of rapport you have with those two ladies.
Just one that's regular that I talk to is in the wing series, Jenny Erickson. We have a good rapport. We bounce ideas off each other every once in a while. She's a great racer. She's been around the sport for a long time. Her and her brother used to race, but they're just a great family to have around. And then Katrina she's in the non-wing. So I was really excited to see finally a woman win at the UMSS. She won a few weekends back and marked that first woman to win this UMSS feature win. So I was excited for her. We're all kind of supporting each other in the sport of typically men. So we keep that going. We keep that camaraderie going for each other.
And of course, your Aunt Judy Kuba Dominic is the public relations director, one on two, I should say, for Chevy. And she and I do a lot of work when we're out and about on the IndyCar series. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had four and five females racing in the IZOD IndyCar Series. That's why I asked how the camaraderie was, because there was really not too much love lost between certain drivers. Oh, one Danica Patrick, one Milka Duno back in the day of the IndyCar Series. And that would have been a pretty good fight had that ever come off that day at Watkins Glen. I don't think Danica would have survived that.
It's actually just funny because anytime I mention racing, everyone always refers to me as Danica. So just a little like inside joke of a lot of the people that don't know racing, and especially dirt track racing, Danica's definitely made a name for herself now, looking back on what she would have done to where she is now. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So with your double major in business and marketing, are you looking to follow after your aunt and join our crazy side of the media world and go out and do racing, but also cover racing in some capacity?
Obviously, any person's dream is to keep racing, and that was my goal, was to hopefully keep pursuing that dream. But as you get older and older, it gets a little bit tougher to do that. But so I always want to have racing in some sort of aspect of my life, and I've actually been able to shadow my aunt a few times, and it's been just a blast, and I really have such a passion for the sport. I don't see myself ever leaving it, whether it's racing or whether it's being on the media side. It's definitely something I'm really interested in, and I kind of have that crazy personality like her, so I think I could fit in pretty well.
Oh, no. Oh, I don't know if I can handle the two of you guys out there in Indianapolis. That would be a riot.
Oh, yeah. We'd have some fun, that's for sure.
Oh, well, she's a great gal to be around. And she was sitting not too far from me in the Chris Economaki Media Center down at the base of the PR housing area, basically, in Indy. And we had the Fast 9 drivers come in, and it was supposed to be a press conference about their day and making the Fast 9 and where they were slotted for the Indy 500 this past May, and it turned into one.
Sure, yeah.
It turned into one big comedy zone, and it was just it was about the most fun 25 minutes of a press conference I have ever had in my 27 years of covering this great sport. What does it mean to your family that the people in the Midwest take time out to honor your grandparents each and every year?
I mean, every year it seems, especially recently, the races keep growing and growing, and our Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series is just growing tremendously. And for my family, it's such a rewarding experience to have people come out and honor the two amazing people. And it means the world to us, I know. And just even being able to race that little bit was something that I can't even put into words how much it means to me just to be able to race for them and be able to honor the lives of, I mean, I didn't know my grandpa that well, but just honor the lives of how much he contributed to the sport. And I think that's huge, especially in our area and in Colorado.
And, of course, this past weekend, the race was won by Brooke Tatnall. He actually has won three in a row right now with the Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series. And you were telling me before we came on the air, you've gotten to know Brooke and his family, and he's been a big help to you so far.
Yeah, I mean, him just coming on board and being able to race with us, having that high of a competition can make anyone better. And being able to go to him for advice and just anything like that, he's just been a huge help to me, especially coming on board. I've just been racing 3 years, and that's pretty much when he started racing with us regularly. Being able to have that person to look up to has been just huge in my ability as a race car driver. And I really appreciate all he's been able to do and all he does for the sport. I mean, he's great. For sure.
For you, this is year number three now. What do you want to accomplish as you move forward with both your racing career, and you'll be graduating in December with the business career? How do you see the inner two hopefully intertwining someday?
Intertwining, I hope someday. I mean, I think a lot of the sport does take the funds, and I think being able to be out of school and not having that expense in itself will be just huge, and just the focusing aspect. I mean, racing and soccer is definitely a hard, very taxed, like physically taxing sport. So being able to just focus on one and making myself better in racing will definitely be what I look for in the future. Just watching myself grow. And as far as business, wherever that takes me, I mean, I think the opportunities are endless, but I hope that it's something in racing, like I said.
Well, Anna, we want to thank you so much for taking time out in between two-a-days here to join us here on the Sprint Car Show and talk with us about what you've done so far in racing. And it's, like I said, it's an absolute joy to be a friend with your aunt. And we appreciate everything that she does and your family has done for the sport of auto racing since 1931. And all the best of luck this year going with soccer, but also as you continue on your sprint car career. And who knows, maybe someday you'll be sitting in the same seat as your aunt occupies some years down the road now, of course, at Indianapolis and having a good time with her as well.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Anna Kuba from the Upper Midwest Sprint Car Series joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We'll take a break and come back with more right after this.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Hi, this is Jessica Zemkin. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, this past weekend, Logan Schuhart picked off two wins, winning the Twin 20s down at Williams Grove Speedway, splitting that with Pat Cannon. And then in a great battle with Chad Layton last Saturday night on the Keith Kaufman tribute night, he picks up the win at the Port Royal Speedway. We welcome in the grandson of the legendary Scruffy, Bobby Allen, to the broadcast once again. Logan, always a pleasure to talk with you. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.
Sure thing. Tell me, it sounded like from what I've read and from what I've heard, it was a pretty interesting race that you had there to pick up the win down at Williams Grove Speedway.
Yeah, I think both of them this weekend were pretty interesting. You know, we don't get a chance to start, you know, up front very often, I feel like. So usually a lot of times we got to work for it. So, but, you know, I did have the privilege to start third on Friday at Williams Grove, and I actually dropped back to fourth and ended up getting by Lance on the bottom. And it seemed like the bottom was what was working for me. The fastest line was definitely around the top, but I was the only one that seemed like when I could peel off the top and take a corner to run the bottom to try and get by somebody, and I felt pretty comfortable going down there. So I think that definitely worked to my advantage, and I definitely had the car that felt good to go to the bottom. So that helped me a lot. It helped me to get by Lance. And then it helped me to get by Hodnett and Aleppo once they got in the lap traffic. Both them guys are definitely really fast. And Aleppo, I think, if we wouldn't have got in the lap traffic, he would have just ran away with it. But he had trouble getting by a couple lap cars, and they might have held him up at the wrong time. And, just got all the leaders, Aleppo, Hodnett, and myself, just all bunched up and actually made it a really exciting race. And, I've heard from fans that it was pretty exciting. It was definitely exciting from the seat. I know that. We passed each other back a couple times. I think I got by Aleppo the lap before, and then he passed me back, and then we ended up sliding him to the finish. So it was definitely a good race. It was exciting for me, and I think it was exciting for the fans.
I'm just wondering, even in your young sprint car career right now, as you were just mentioning, how exciting it is for you from the cockpit. Do you ever get that chance because of the long straightaways at the Grove? I mean, I know the concentration level is very high, but do you ever get that chance for a split second to go, man, this is really fun, and knowing what the fans are seeing, you ever catch yourself, just for that split second going, this is good stuff, and then you get right back into being a very focused race car driver?
I wouldn't say a whole lot while you're racing. You really don't have time to think about it. You're too focused, and you're trying to do the best you can to run up front. You're focused on where you got to be at what time. So you don't really have a whole lot to think about then until afterwards. As soon as I got out of the car, actually, as soon as I passed the checkered flag, I knew that we won. I was like, that was an awesome race. That was pretty fun. I knew when we got back in it, I was crew was going to be all jumping around. Any of them guys are going to be excited. They work really hard on this race car and on Jacob's race car.
Mm-hmm.
And, when it pays off, it definitely makes you feel good. And, we have that, our trailer is probably built back in the 80s, or it was built back in the 80s. And I don't know how many people we had standing on top of that trailer, but from what I heard, they're all jumping around at that time. And I know if I was standing on that trailer, I definitely wouldn't have wanted to be up there because I wouldn't trust the thing. But it was definitely, them guys were excited. I was excited, and it was good for our team.
Let me ask you, is it because of the way the Grove is laid out, is it harder to start up front and maintain a top five position throughout the race because of the talent level that is there? Or is it more difficult to come from the middle of the pack, say where Fred starts, and try to pass people and get a win at Williams Grove?
It's definitely, I think, as a talent level, it's not like it used to be. Since I started racing, most people just buy their stuff off a shelf. And it's, I think we're one of the only teams that builds most of their stuff, except for a couple guys. We were parked next to Mark Smith last night. He built his own frames, obviously. But, everybody has, fairly close to having the same equipment. You have a lot of good drivers. And, everybody fairly runs their cars, pretty similar. So when you're running all the same stuff, you got good drivers and stuff like that, it makes it very hard to come from the back. Even if you hit your marks the whole race, you might start 12th and you might make it up the fourth or fifth, but that's still even saying something. That's a heck of a run even doing that with the talent that's up there. And it's just the way, when the track gets a certain way, I think that's why the Outlaws try and make it dry, but not too dry. Williams Grove's hard because of the size. Any half mile, when you make them dry, it's good to be dry because you can move around, it widens out, but it's very easy to get to a certain point where there's no top groove and then it's all around the bottom. So it's just a very fine line, and it's just hard when you got the type of talent you do at Williams Grove and in Central PA.
We're talking with Logan Short, who picked up two wins over the weekend, one at Williams Grove, one at Port Royal. That gives him three wins on the year, including his nonstop six-and-a-half-minute flyer down at Lincoln Speedway for his first career win. Logan, 13th in the points at Lincoln, 9th in the points at Williams Grove. I know you guys aren't chasing the points per se. You've been out doing some running with the World of Outlaws here and there. Two questions for you at this point of the season. How would you guys grade yourself in terms of the performance where you're at? And we've talked in the past, you would love to get onto the Outlaw Trail. How is that looking in the next couple of years for you to be able to achieve that goal?
I know he definitely wants to run with the Outlaws next year. It's the plan just because of the, you know, the money thing. I think it definitely is a better deal to run with the Outlaws, even though you're traveling a whole lot and you're doing all that stuff. Just to show up, it pays, and to run and make the races pays better too. So, and I think, and also traveling with the Outlaws and running with them type of guys is going to make you just that much better of a driver and a team, and you'll learn a whole lot more. So that's part of it. But as far as our performance so far this year, you know, we started off really good. We were running consistent top fives every week, and then we went through two or three months where we were just really bad up until right before we went out to Knoxville to I-55. We built this new car, and I think part of it was, you know, I crashed that car at Lincoln one time. That was right when we stopped doing good. And it was only a couple weeks after our win. We're still running consistent top fives, and I crashed the car at Lincoln, and it seemed like it wasn't the same afterwards. Like, didn't matter what we did, we couldn't get it, you know, couldn't get it to go good. We had a couple races here and there where it seemed like we were decent, but we just weren't running good. And then we put this new car together. We went out to I-55. I started 10th in that, and I was running 6th. I was actually getting ready to pass Shots, and we broke. So, and Shots ended up running 2nd. So I think that I had a top 3 car that night. I think I could have ran in the top 3 and ran decent at Knoxville, come back, run the Twin 20s, a 4th, 2 firsts on the weekend, a 3rd on Sunday, and then a 10th last night. So, I think we're definitely getting better since we built this new car, and we're learning, and we're getting better. So I expect to do a lot better towards the end of the season, but you know, you never know. We'll figure it out. We'll find out.
Well, not too many people can say they passed Donnie Schatz this lately, because since the Brad Doty Classic, he's finished outside the top 3 once, and that was a 6th place finish. So you guys obviously have found a right combination with this new car. Tell me a bit about Knoxville. What did you learn from going out there again this year? Where do you guys think you've improved, and what can you learn for going back for next year?
We pretty much learned what not to do, kind of. We were fast. We seemed like we could keep up with just anybody when the track was fast, or it still had a little bit of a moisture to it where you could run the middle and the bottom and, you know, move up to the top. But when it got real slick up to the wall and, you know, it was hard to run the bottom, I was just kind of sitting on top of the track. So feature time, we still yet to find a setup that, you know, that feels good to me and makes me feel comfortable. And Knoxville is just a hard track in general. So, you know, but just making the B main and running in the B main at the Knoxville Nationals is pretty good for our second year. So we're going to come back next year and hope to do a little bit better and maybe make the A. But, you know, we still learned a good bit while we were out there.
And outside of the regular races around Central Pennsylvania for the remainder of the season, any opportunities for you guys, and I'm excluding the Royal Finals here, any other opportunities that you guys are going to take a look at to go run with the Outlaws?
I think when they come back and they run outdoor one more time, I think we might go there. We're going to go up to Lernerville when the Outlaws are there. And, you know, any East Coast thing, yeah, like you said, we're going to go to the World Finals. Anything else they have back in this area, we'll probably go to. So it's not a whole lot of traveling yet. We still have, I think, like at least about 30 races left. We still have a good many races. But not a whole lot of traveling is what we've done the last couple months.
And if you guys make the decision to go with the Outlaws next year, when do you think that decision might come about?
He's got it pretty set in stone that that's what he wants to do, and we think we can do it. The biggest thing we're having trouble with is Canada. You got to go up to Canada. That's going to be hard for us with, you know, passports, the trailer, and all, stuff like that. So we got to worry about that kind of stuff, and we'll get that figured out. And then the beginning of the season when they go from Florida the whole way to California and then they don't race much out there, that would be hard for us just because you're not making much money back. You got a lot of travel and a lot of gas money, and you're not racing a whole lot. So, you know, we're not type of team that can just sit on stuff like that and not be making money. We need to make money. So we need to find out how to get the money before we go out there. And then after that, it seems like there's a pretty good chance we can do it. So if we figure them two things out, there's a, he's about probably 85% sure that we're going to do it.
That's pretty interesting, and I'm sure the border guards at the crossing would be taking a look at that trailer and going, where did this thing come from? But you're right. I knowing the family and knowing the passion that your mom and the rest of the family have for you out there as a racer, I could see them jumping up and down that trail, but I could also see what you were talking about and saying you wouldn't want to be up there. God forbid something would have happened, but that's the type of passion that the Allen family has, and it's greatly appreciated. Logan, as always, we thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule here to chat with us on the Sprint Car Show. And again, congratulations on the two wins over this past weekend at Port Royal and at Williams Grove Speedway.
Hey, thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Logan Shewhart joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We're going to take a break. Be back with more right after this. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on rod ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality of rod ends on the market with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show. Thanks to our special guests this week, Damian Gardner, Anna Kuba, and Logan Shewhart. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.